welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I'm Jeremy Heide.
And I'm guest contributor Gary from Jacksonville. How's everyone doing tonight?
Thanks for joining us, Gary. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Comics are a love of mine. So when you mix Babylon 5 and comics, I could not be here.
Yes, that's on tap for today to talk about which comics we're going to talk about and how we're going to talk about them.
We're going to talk about them all, silly girl.
Well, we have to pick an order, and then we have to pick contributors who have volunteered their time, because you and I don't have all the comics.
Well, this is true. Now, I know people that they'd be shocked if you want. I'm not worried about it. We have gotten quite a number of responses to the email account. I just have not had time to really sort through them all, so that's my error, and I'm working to change that. So next week we will have plans in place. But having said that, I think we want to do it right for you people.
Yes.
Anyways, hey, on a completely unrelated note, before we get into our melee for the evening, I urge every one of our listeners to go out and see John Carter. I saw it over the weekend. It's a fantastic movie. Pay no attention to what they're saying. And actually, the more I'm reading in the press, the more reviews I'm reading are saying, don't pay attention to the story that people have been feeding you about it. It's a very entertaining movie, and go see it. So
well,
there.
Yeah, as a side note, from the Disney point of view, there was an executive who actually chose to chop off the From Mars part because they thought it was too much referring to old literature and that it would turn people off. I've heard they've been fired as well.
Yes,
but,
she was fired unceremoniously. When I read about her marketing decisions, I lost it. And apparently, nobody wanted to use the word Mars because the past four or five movies that had Mars in the title tanked. Like,
well,
people are stupid enough to think it's the same movie. What? It's not the same. What?
Well, here's what I heard about the Of Mars part of it, was that it was cut because there was fear that the female movie viewer wouldn't go see it. But I got to tell you, from seeing the movie and seeing Taylor Kirsch, he's actually in a greater state of undress than any of the female characters in the film.
I think
the guy is buff. And I think if they had played that, it didn't wouldn't have said of Mars or of your mom. I think
all they had to do was play up the fact that a princess of Mars, a warrior princess from Mars, needed the help of a hunky guy to save her world. Duh. It's a love story, too. The women would have gone to see it.
Exactly. It truly is. It is epic. It's a great spectacle. I saw it in regular D, not in 3D. I understand in 3D the effects aren't nearly as seamless appearing as they are otherwise. There are scenes in there. There's this the one shot that blew me away is there's a scene where Dejah Thoris and John Carter and Sola the Thark are paddling their little raft down the river Iss, and you would swear that there really was an actual honest to God Thark in that boat without thinking, you know what, they composited that in. It was that seamless. I was, and never mind all the flying vehicles and all the rest and the grandiose cities. It was that one moment that I realized, holy cow, these guys did it right.
Nice.
Yeah. It you really do need to see on the big screen, because it is just epic and sweeping. The changes that they made to the story, I think, were actually good changes. And it wasn't just simply, oh, well, modern audiences won't get this. They do some nice things that I think give a little bit more depth to what's in essence just a pulp story.
Well, I do have a question. Given how we've seen some traditional science fiction treated, for example, like iRobot and stuff like this, you felt it was much more in tune with the source material?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The prime changes that they made, and this isn't really spoilers, they give more backstory and a little more pathos to Carter, And they do some really cool things with that. I won't tell you anything more about that, but they give him a little more depth. Deja Thoris is less the she's not just simply Princess of Helium. She's like their grand scientist or whatever. You know, and she can kick butt with the best of them, but it doesn't go, you know, there's almost an anti-cliche going with the princesses who can rescue themselves. She needs the rescuing, but not because she is a weak character. It's that her situation is that desperate. And she doesn't have the power to be able to save her people and has to turn elsewhere. And that's all I'll say about that. You know, and there's some other things in there that they've added on. And it's kind of a distillation of the first and second novels. But I really, like I said, they were the right changes. You know, the other criticism that I've read in some quarters is that it's an incomprehensible plot with all these things going on. It's not, people. If you pay attention to it, anybody with generally average intelligence, I would think, would be able to follow it. And if you can't, then you've been watching Transformers too much.
Well, not only that, but even sometimes, you know, a good movie does take a second watch to catch everything. You know, it could just be that simple. Think how many times Babylon 5, you go back and you watch it and you catch more. So.
You know, you got a point there, Gary, but see the movie, you'll know what I mean. It's not that, and I do want to see it a second time because there's a lot of richness to it, but it's just, you know, if you just pay attention, you'll understand how this bit over here involves this other bit over here, and you don't necessarily need to have this bit resolved for it to make sense in the context of the movie. And they do leave a nice hook that I hope they will get a sequel, but if they don't, it's still a fairly well self-contained movie. So anyways, there you go, people. Go see it. Don't pay attention to the people who are telling you it's a dumb movie or people telling you it's a flop because it cost half a godzillion dollars.
Yeah, the first thing I heard was that it did really well on the international market over the weekend, so that may end up saving it. So,
yeah, and I think I hope word of mouth is going to buoy it over time. So we'll see. Anyways, so there's that. There's my exhortation to you people, geeks unite.
Any other news out there we need to touch on?
Well, there was the announcement by the Scriptbooks team. We were sort of wondering why they've been so quiet and hush-hush lately. And then
yes,
they did release their next project, so to speak.
Tell us a little bit more about that, Gary, since
sure.
You brought it up.
Oh, no, I'll be glad to. What they've done is, I guess Pat Tallman sort of got the ball rolling with her own personal book, which was somewhat Scriptbook related, but it stood by itself and it's not considered part of this series. But they're going to start doing interviews. Primarily, they took older interviews that were done at the time the show was broadcast by interviewer's name? Joe Nazzaro. If you've ever gotten any of the Babylon 5 magazines that came out at the time, or even if you hit an old Starlog or, you know, similar science fiction magazine that was coming out at that time, you'd run across his name sooner or later. He was on set a lot and did, you know, first person interviews with pretty much every major person in the show. I don't think he ever covered Snackman, to my knowledge, but he's talked with everyone else, including our own Jeffrey, at one point. But anyway, so what they've done is taken his raw interviews. What the interviews we've seen typically are less than a third of what he ever spoke with any person about at a given time, and then he would edit it down, obviously, for page length. Most of his articles had to be 2 or 3 pages long for the magazines that he submitted to. But he kept all his original source files, and so a 3-page interview that, if you actually read it, runs about 7 to 10 minutes. He actually talked with the star that time for about 45. And so we get these whole long interviews that we've never seen this complete material before. And he went to he's going to press with all of them. To my knowledge, they're in time order, I think, for each of the each of the five seasons, maybe, and I guess maybe the movies or something in the sixth year, or you know, prior to that. They're each going to be signed by a different Babylon 5 star. So those of us who are not so able to go to conventions or something like this will not only have JMS's signature if you've gotten any of the previous books, but you'll actually have one of the stars of Babylon 5. For, you know, for some people, JMS still isn't a big draw, but to have your book signed by Peter Jurassic, Londo, or Bruce Boxleitner, you know, John Sheridan, or Claudia, or Mira, you know, that is really can mean something to a fan, where having JMS's signature might not. So they're actually giving us that opportunity as well. So there'll be six books total. They've only announced the signatures for the first four, which is Peter, Bruce, Claudia, and Mira. We don't know who the fifth and sixth volumes will be signed yet. They have all been done and completed, so it's not like we're going to have to sit and wait for months the way that we do sometimes to see, you know, when is it ever going to come out again. You know, I was always very frustrated by that. So they're going to be released pretty much every month starting, I believe that you can already place orders for the first volume as of today. So
yeah,
you can you know, can go ahead and order them, and every month for the next 6 months, there will be a new one coming out. They're all done, ready to go to press. My only flaw is, and I've actually spoken with Jack Lipp from the Script Books team already about it, is that I can't just order all six at once. Cafe Press is not set up to handle those sort of like future order type of packages, so I'll just have to wait each month to do it. I know you had talked on a previous show about, I think, Jacqueline, who's the head of the books team, about doing the incentive $10 off discount promo when it was first starting, and they have decided to do this, so maybe they took your advice or decided to do it anyway. And so they are offering that for, I think, the first week or two that it's being made available. It's $10 off. It isn't a cheap series by any means, and so I know there's a lot. Actually, it was $20 off. The books are going to be $70 a piece, but if you get them within the first week of being offered, in this case till March 20th, if the show goes out on time, it's going to be $49. And I'm sure they'll probably continue this for each of the following volumes. And I definitely suggest, if you are a fan, get them early. Save that $20. I've tried to use many Cafe Press coupons, and they don't work with these books, guys. Cafe Press may use them. You might get lucky and find something for a few dollars, but you're not going to save 50% off anything. So this $20 off, you know, offer that they make as the books just released is probably the best discount you're going to get on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the discount we were talking about on a previous show was just for the reissue of the Chronologies.
Oh, that's right.
Right, yeah. So this is an awesome, awesome series. Now, are they including the transcripts and the audio for the interviews?
No, I don't believe they're including the audio. However,
what's on the CD? What's on the CD?
It's one interview with Peter and Andreas that was recorded between, I guess, the hiatus between seasons 4 and 5. You know, in that messy Blackpool era, like to refer to it. And so I think it's just the one. It's not a complete recording, but it's an uncensored transcript of the recordings. The book's about 350 pages, and there's they found some more pictures to throw in here into this one too, that supposedly yet more never seen before. I can't believe that the way I scour the internet, but I'll take their word for it.
And this is a limited edition.
Yes,
I was just reading. It ends September 30th. There will be no more orders ever.
And, you know, as much as they sort of throw that out there, and you have to wonder if it's true. I mean, I look back now. It's now been a few years since they released the original scripts, and they have never come back and reoffered them.
They even cover that on the page. These books will never, ever be available again, even under a different name.
And if they've kept their word on the script books, I have no reason to doubt that they'll keep them on these too. So this is the chance to get it. And you might say, I can find some of these interviews. You won't find the complete interviews, at least at this level. Plus, if you hunt around eBay or any place, it's really hard to find some of these Starlog novel things and stuff like this. You're going to be going through one heck of a search to try and put these together yourself if you ever wanted to. And right. So to get it in this nice package, albeit I'm not admitting that this isn't a hefty price tag for it, but I don't know how you could put it together much cheaper, honestly.
It says the source material goes all the way to Lost Tales. Also.
And doesn't it also say something about they'll tell us why, what the hell happened with Crusade, what the hell happened?
They say they can't, but you'll know after it comes out. Please forgive this non-answer, but it's the truth. We can't commit to a specific release date for the balance of the Hell series for reasons that will be clear when the rest of the series is released. So,
my personal guess might be, and this is just a guess, I have no inside knowledge at all, might be that they might be actually doing more interviews with the actual cast of Crusade, maybe to throw in too, so it'll be sort of in this genre, you know, where they're actually speaking with individuals and getting their side of what happened.
Sure, that makes sense.
Okay. So many books, so little money to spend on them.
Oh gosh!
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, you're not kidding. I was like, when I first saw it, I said, "Ooh," and then I saw the price, I said, "Ah." Yeah, it's not cheap. It's good quality stuff. I mean, I can't say it's not worth the money, but I suppose you do have to be a rather intimate fan to go to this level for these types for this particular collection.
Well, Gary, as you get the books, you'll have to come on and review them and tell us what you think of each. Because I can tell you,
let's see.
Happening for me.
When Summer was talking about the chronology and that only the what were your exact words? Hardcore devoted fans, they'll probably buy it anyway. I was thinking, wow, Summer can read my mind. She's absolutely right. Because I did get it with the other cover. Yeah. But one nice little side note as I've followed around the internets and the inner tubes is that Pat Talman is doing a lot more conventions lately where she really hadn't been in the past. So this might be a chance if you keep eye on some cons, you might be able to actually see her in person because she's doing a lot more appearances than she ever did before.
Awesome. Do they have a release date for the first volume yet? Like when they're going to start shipping?
I think the date I thought it said was today. It was today as we're recording, which is March 14th.
So they start mailing them out on the 14th, or you can start ordering them on the 14th?
I believe you could. Well, if you go to their site and sign up for the mailing list, you get this, you get these announcements as they're coming out sent right to your email. And they had sent it a few days ago, and I had, I had ordered it right as they sent the email out, so I think you could have already ordered it if you haven't already, but the discount is good till March 20th.
Okay, well, let us know when you get it, and try not to lose any night's sleep going through every single word of it when you first get it.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it. I'd love you hear all these after stories now, but I'd like to hear them talk about it, in the beginning, in the first season or so, and see what their opinions were then, because that person's no longer around, so it's nice to hear them then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Oh, well, I think, is that all the news we have for today?
I think that's it for right now, sure.
Okay. Well, we will take a really quick break and come back and discuss how we're going to discuss the comic books.
There's a reading order for that? Oh, yeah.
We're going to make one, so yes.
About the people of this fleet now and surrender.
No. Not now. Not ever.
Do you hear me? I will use every cannon,
every bomb, every bullet
is the White Star Fleet. Negative on surrender. We will not stand down.
Who is this? Identify yourself.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, commander, daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance, and the boot that is going to kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth, sweetheart. I am death incarnate, and the last living thing that you are ever going to see. God sent me.
Hold it there, big guy. Yeah, the warp drive. Hand it over.
Your culture is primitive, yet so funky.
Okay. Comic books.
Right.
I wonder how many newer fans of the series, like people who found the TV show over, I'm going to say the past 5 years or so, even knew anything about the comics at all.
Well, I got to say that looking at doing a little bit of research, I'm actually surprised that as many got published as got published in the first place.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, JMS had major issues with this, and part of it was DC Comics' own managerial structure upon who they allow to do what. And going back to some of his discussions, he was stymied because he couldn't be the editor of the book and be the writer. Their corporate policy forbade it.
What?
Yes, yeah. At the time, their corporate policy did not allow the same person who was an editor to be the writer. So if he wanted to write the stories, he could not have control of the book.
Sounds like they're taking a page from Warner Brothers.
They are Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
DC Comics is owned by Warner Brothers.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, that makes a lot of sense,
Gary,
then.
Were they owned at that point in time by Warner?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
They had been owned for some time by Warner Brothers, you know, all the way. I know they were owned by Warner Brothers prior to the original Superman movie coming out. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
So it was a significant stretch of time they had already been owned, which it made sense for them to then do the comic book series because, you know, they're, of course, they're all one happy family, which is completely untrue, as we've heard. But yeah, it made sense that they would probably license the rate to the show at a discount for them.
Well, I do remember reading some comments from JMS at the time that because he couldn't be the editor and the writer, that what was happening is whoever was editing was dumbing down the scripts.
Significantly,
That was a problem. And not knowing that, that's one of the reasons that I only ever got 2 issues. I was given 2 issues for Christmas and was so thoroughly unimpressed by them that I had no desire to seek out any more.
Yeah, and that being said, having I've been collecting comic books for, gosh, over 30 years at this point. The writing, you can tell that the story was chopped up. The art is absolutely atrocious. It is horrible for a comic book. So I don't feel they didn't put a quality artist on here. Of course, I believe they went off mainly JMS outlines. I don't know if he actually wrote word for word, but it was sort of based on what he said. And I believe his preferred order for following the books is to avoid the first 10 issues altogether.
Which basically leaves only one story and one interesting spinoff.
Yeah, pretty for the most part, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wait. It's an 11-issue series. They didn't even go a full year. And he's saying avoid the first 10?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there's in Valen's name.
Well, that's
separate.
Significantly later, though. That happened almost 3 years, 2 or 3 years later than the original 11 series run.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, in
they're
Valen's
still
name,
part of the comic. So.
Well, it's considered a separate mini series, and in Valen's name was actually the first one I heard of. Because the first comics came out around the same time as season one, right? Is that about right?
No. It would have been after season one. Because, no, wait.
Okay.
Because the first issue published takes place, this is one of the first ones that I, no, the second one, but the first three issues, first four issues deal with Sinclair's reassignment to Minbar.
Well, which, interestingly enough, the first one was released December of 94, so I guess, yeah, that would be second season.
Yeah. Yeah, no, interesting, upon retrospect, because I haven't gone back to read the ones that I have, I don't recall them having really a whole lot of overlap with events in To Dream in the City of Sorrows. So we'll have to, when we get to finally reading these, we'll really know for sure.
Right, and because the miniseries came out between seasons 4 and 5, right?
Yes, I believe. In
Valen's name. Yeah, that was the first time I heard about the comics. So we're talking like literally a three and a half year difference when I went, wait, there's other comics? And I couldn't find them at the time. And then
weren't doing trade paperbacks back then. And more importantly, they never did do trade paperbacks of them.
Not
only
of all of them.
Only
of
Valen's name. I don't believe they did.
No, Titan Books put out graphic novels. Compilations of issues 1 and 4, and then a second compilation of issues 5 and 8. And DC put out a compilation of issues 1 through 4 and number 11. I found those on Amazon. They do exist.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yes.
Matter of fact, somebody is selling some of the individual episodes, individual issues on Amazon for relatively cheap, you know?
Was relatively cheap.
In the $3 to $6 range.
Okay. Yeah, that is relatively cheap.
I said relatively.
No. Compared to.
Yeah, compared to the out of print novels, you know, 80 bucks each. Yeah.
Right.
So, yes, exactly. So yeah, they do have some compilations. It doesn't cover all of the comics, but from what you're saying, we might be better off not having those.
I can't recommend that anyone go out and actually purchase these or really go out of their way. As I said, the art's horrible. The stories are chopped up. With very few exceptions, do they actually build into any part of the story that you need to know? I think there's, two or three points maybe that reference or carry over. I think it's primarily with Ivanova and Talia in one of them, but that's about it.
So they really don't connect back to the main series at all?
I'm not saying that they don't tie into things, but they're not like a piece of the puzzle that you need to go to follow the story at all.
Okay.
You're not missing any salient points by skipping the regular series. The In Valen's Name part, which I believe JMS does, you know, consider canon and recommend reading, yes. I think it really fleshes out Sinclair a lot more, and it helped that, and it tells, you know, the story of the end of Babylon 4. So does close that loop in a sense that we never had before. So
right.
So that I would definitely recommend, and they make a trade paperback, and you can find them on eBay. They're not that pricey, and that's right. Definitely worth it. The first 10 or 11, if you find it like dirt cheap, possibly. But I would even as a true fan, I wouldn't recommend anyone going out of their way.
Right. Now, I've actually considered getting the graphic novel for In Valen's Name, because I actually do have the individual issues of In Valen's Name. I had them, you know, read them, I guess, about six or. Getting closer to 8 years ago now, but I don't know where they are. I've misplaced them. So I'm going to have to go digging through shelves and boxes to find them to refresh my memory for next time. Given the, I'm going to say, negative response to the story content in the first 11, I'd like to try to cover all of those first 11 in one show, because it doesn't sound like it ties back a whole lot to the main series. So we wouldn't have to go delving as deeply into the content. And that'll give us an entire episode to focus on just in Balin's name.
Right.
Oh, and we're leaving out one comic book that we haven't really discussed yet. Also, is the mini comic that came with the Lost Tales CD. If yes. you were lucky yes. enough to get it,
I was.
It's not long. It's not very detailed, but it is a very nice little homage. So,
okay, so we could probably cover that in the in the first comics issue. I really don't know how many people actually even knew that existed. Because I know we talked about it a little bit when we covered in Lost Tales when it first came out, but I don't know how many people actually went to Best Buy to pick up their copy of Lost Tales to get the comic.
And they ran out before they sold all
they did.
Of them too. So
they did, and I don't know that that's ever turned up anywhere. I mean, I've never seen it for sale on the secondary markets on eBay or Amazon. I've literally never seen it anywhere. So either people bought Lost Tales and just never realized that that insert was a comic. And I'm actually looking at mine right now.
More likely, people knew what it was, and that's just not something that they're willing to let go of.
Yeah, because it's only like, what, 8 pages here?
Yeah, if that.
Yeah, it's pretty thin.
And it really is just an homage to the passing of Andreas Katsoulis and Richard Biggs.
Mm-hmm. But still.
Yeah, it's fun.
The artwork's at least very nicely done.
Yes, yes, it is very nicely done.
I wonder if we would have gotten future mini comics.
With future DVDs?
Goodness.
That's right. Jesus, more, why don't you?
There's probably... Oh, I don't know. I don't even want to hazard a guess. Never mind. All right. So, yeah, that's how we can approach that.
Okay.
With those. Oh, there's also the Psycorn U, which was a single one-off, if you will, that... describes the inner workings of the Psycorps to people just like you and me.
Which, another Psycorps propaganda piece?
Yeah, basically.
Sweet.
I still think they should have done an entire Psycorps episode just on the propaganda, because it would have been hilarious.
Yes.
Every time I see those that one commercial they did for finding out you're a telepath.
Yes.
It, oh my goodness. When I saw that, I couldn't stop thinking of the little news vignettes from the movie Starship Troopers. Would you like to know more?
Yes, I love that.
They could have done an entire Psycorps propaganda episode with that little, would you like to know more kind of thing. I would have cracked up. I totally would have cracked up. Well, we can hope. And if anybody out there wants to do a parody, you've got my support. Oh. So now, after the comics, I think we're going to talk about the short stories first and then get into the novels to give people a chance to flip through the ones they want to.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
Yes, and maybe by then the Scripps team will have a book out of the short stories, because I don't have all of them, and they're very hard to come by and quite pricey. So I imagine that a lot of fans don't know they exist or don't really have access to them either.
Are they really that pricey?
Yes. Yeah, the Amazing Story ones, some of them can, I've seen them go in, over $20, $30.
Wow, really?
That's
I've lost bids on them, so I can't say I'm aggressively after them, but every few months I'll try and hunt them down and see if I can get them for a reasonable amount of money. But it doesn't seem to happen, so I'll just have to, pray to Jason and Jacqueline. So
yeah, the thing is I actually bought Genius Loci and Space Time and Incurable Romantic. I saw those issues of Amazing Stories on the newsstands. And I picked them up because they had Babylon 5 related covers.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know about the first one, which was Shadow of His Thoughts. I actually did get that later. No, somebody sent that to me, I believe. But I had also bought, I was buying the official B5 magazines as they were coming out. So 4 of the 6 stories I actually got when they were out on the newsstands. And yes, we did confirm there are 6 stories. There are 4 written by JMS, but 6 total. I believe. Yeah, I copied the links from ISN Anchor Desk, an awesome website, by the way. Amazing Stories number 597, Shadow of His Thoughts. Amazing Stories 599, Genius Loci. Amazing Stories 602, Space Time and the Incurable Romantic. B5 Magazine number 22, Hidden Agendas. B5 Magazine number 23, True Seeker by Fiona Avery. And B5 Magazine number 24, which was the very last issue, The Nautilus Coil by Gregory Keyes.
Oh, they're all so, canon, by the way.
Yes, they are.
Yes, even the Incurable Romantic. So,
even though JMS wrote it to basically tell everyone, get off my ass about Marcus already.
Without going into it, that's probably one of my least favorite P5 stories.
I can see some merit in it. It's fanciful. It's whimsical. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
There's kind of this perverse quality to it.
There is, but I didn't hate it as much as a lot of other people did.
Okay.
It's been 5 years since I've read it, so that might change. I don't know, but I remember reading it at the time, going, "That's kind of weird." Not bad, but weird.
I liked it. It was nice. You know, in so many things in Babylon 5, there's never really an ending in a sense, and it's nice to have a happy one. You know, things seem to just move on and continue as JMS wanted. But you know, it's nice to see somebody get a really happy ending. So
yeah, everybody likes happy endings every once in a while.
And there weren't that many in Babylon 5. So the implication that this was a somebody finally gets to live happily ever after was kind of sweet.
Maybe that's why people don't like it.
No, that's not why I have problems with it.
We will save that discussion. Right,
yes.
When we talk about the stories. Right. Now, Gary is the second biggest Babylon 5 collector I know behind Peter. How many of the toys do you have? Or did you get into the toys?
I have all the action figures. Well, I take that back. I'm still running across variants of the action figures that I hadn't known existed. Thanks to you, Summer, I now own one of the Vorlon ones that I was not aware that existed.
Is that Visitor?
No. Yeah, that's the one that Jeffrey signed. You won that one.
Oh, good job.
Yes, I was the only bidder.
So you didn't have to pay that $300?
No, I didn't pay the $300. But anyway,
$300, buy it now.
You know, I bought the regular one, and Kosh, like in the front, is blue and more of a gray, I guess, on his head. But in this one, it was an exclusive through the company that distributes comic books in the United States called Diamond. And theirs is actually green in the front, which looks a little bit more realistic to a Kosh figure. And the top of his head, as well as, I guess you want to call it, the crest, is all done in a gold. So as opposed to a gray and blue, so it's very different than the other ones. And I know there are some other ones. There's I think a Drazi variant, and there's some other ones. So I'm short, I think, one of the shadow creature variants and one of the Drazi ones. So, but other than that, I have all the action figures. I have the pewter space station. I even have a rare official Babylon 5 shot glass.
Ooh.
Which is rare because most of the stuff you see on eBay with Babylon 5 on it is just knockoff stuff. JMS actually never authorized any drinking paraphernalia or anything like that because of the issues that he has with alcohol, or at least the disdain of it. Right. And so they had made this before they actually, you know, before he got light of it, and they canceled it right afterwards. So it's somewhat of a one of the rarer collectibles. Let's see, what else do I have? I have several of the Micro Machines, even though mine is not signed by Straczynski.
Well, I'm one of those that took them all out of the package.
I've taken some of the action figures out of the packages because I have duplicates and triplicates of it. The pewter space station sits on my shelf right next to all my script books, along with the fan club versions of the Ranger pin and the Psycor pins, which it's hard to find the fan ones, but it's they were well worth hunting down. The quality's a lot better than you find otherwise.
Yeah, I've heard how good the quality of that one Ranger pin is, and I've never seen one that didn't cost, you know, an elbow.
No, but yeah, it's a but yeah. So those are both nice. I'm trying to think if I have anything else as far as toys go. Now, keychains, stuff along those lines. I found a Babylon 5. It was like a bubble machine type, a little bubble gun. But it doesn't look like any prop from the set. They literally threw some other toy onto a card. But that's probably one of the more odder things that I have as far as toys go.
I remember when the Micro Machines came out, I went to probably 6 or 7 different toy stores in the area to get up to obtain what I could. And then I also had a friend down in the Maryland area buy up what they could, and because they were $4 each. So I got myself an entire set that was still in the packages. I think I ended up helping Mer Lafferty fill in what she was missing from her set, and I still had enough left over to actually open them up and stand them along my desk.
Nice.
I mean, literally, they were $4 each, so I'm like, yeah, I'll buy as many as I can find, and I'll have Minions go buy more.
Yeah,
right.
And then the only other thing I think I have really is I have some Cloisonné pins that were, I'm told, were official of the station, Mimbari cruiser, an Earth Force. I think it's a Earth Force destroyer, like the Hyperion, and a Star Fury. And then the patches, of course. But I don't know where those would fall under toys or not. So,
did you build any of the plastic models?
No, I have to admit, models have never been something I've been crazily interested in, mainly because I don't have the skill to make them look like they do on the box.
Right.
It yeah. just ends up being an exercise in frustration for me.
Understood.
Do models have value after you tear them apart and put them together? As far as trade collectibles?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Once they're opened out of the box,
right, they're pretty much useless.
They're worthless. Plastic, yeah.
Except to the owner, of course.
But that, and I never really got into the collectible cards either. I outgrew baseball cards some time ago, and I never quite picked it back up again. So, although I see some of the cards still selling on eBay rather frequently, which, you know, there must still be a market for them, and some of them are interesting. I know my particular favorites are the prop closet cards that they have.
I know Neil from Bowie is big on the collectible card game, so he's going to join us to chat about the collectible cards when we get to them. I know that, let's see, for the models, I actually did get the Pewter Star Fury and the Pewter Station. I was a little miffed that the station was so small compared to how monstrous the Star Fury is. The Star Fury has one flaw. If you sit it on the stand that it comes with, it kills it. It actually mangles the stand. Because they sit on the stand. The base is wood, and the little arm that comes up from the base is actually also metal. And you put the Star Fury itself. All right, here's the difference. The Pewter station is about between 6 and 7 inches long, and it's about the size of a small mag light, and it literally weighs next to nothing. The pewter Star Fury is a black
Omega.
Which
one? They made both, I think.
They only made the black Omega that I know of, that one company.
They made both
models, but the station is tiny compared to the Star Fury. The black Omega Star Fury is, I'm going to say, 5 by 3 or 4, and it weighs, I'm going to say, 2.5 pounds. It's heavy. If you hit somebody with it, you would crack open their skull.
Lieutenant, what do you think it was? Sergeant?
It was a Star Fury that came flying across the room. And literally, if you threw this at somebody, it would go through the wall. And it broke the stand. I can take a picture of the stand where it's mangled and twisted from the weight of the Star Fury. The thing fell off in the middle of the night once, and the thump scared the crap out of me because I didn't know what it was.
You're not talking about those little pewter fingers.
I'm talking about the big one, the huge Star Fury. It's just thunk. I heard this thunk. I'm like running around the apartment going, what was that? And it wasn't until the next day when I went to sit at my desk with the computer that I noticed that the Star Fury was on the floor. And it broke off one of the guns. I was so peeved.
Oh, man.
Yep. It broke off one of the guns and bent one of the Aerolons. And Jason's agreeing with me. Summer speaks the truth. We had one in the store where I work that fell off its stand. Yeah. And I will actually take a picture of the mangled stand because it's funny. Because you see it's all twisted up like, you know, something came through and melted it. And it boggled my mind why the Star Fury was so huge and the station was so puny.
It is small. So. I want that one, like, what I believe from the set, the one that was in the, Sheridan's office, that did JMS end up with that one?
I hope somebody did. I hope someone involved with the production of the show took that home and has it up on a shelf in a safe place, because that was a really nice one.
Yeah, it's probably in Jeffrey's trunk. He forgot about
it. Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you, if I were to win the lottery, there are a whole lot of sci-fi props out there I would hunt down. Let me tell you. But the one toys that I never got were the plastic models, the monogram, Revell monogram.
Yep.
I never got those. Maybe because I knew I would never, ever, ever have the time to put them together. Much less the ability to paint them properly.
Yeah, exactly. I used to build models when I was a boy, but that's because I had the time and the resources to put into that kind of stuff. And yeah. Too time consuming, like Gary said, to make it look good, it takes a lot of time to do that.
Oh, and I give credit to people that can do it because there are amazing works of art. And just because they started as a plastic pre-printed model, people spend, you know, hundreds of hours re-sanding and putting extra plastic into the grooves that aren't, smooth enough and stuff like that. And I, over on some of the Star Trek forums, I see amazing work done, and it's just incredible. I'm in awe. You know, I suppose it is, you know, anytime something's created nice and you don't have that skill to do it, you're just, you know, you're just awestruck by it. So whether it be, you know, a model or a drawing or anything.
The only model I ever did was an X-Wing fighter, and they're white, right? So who needs to paint it?
Yeah.
It was new. Yeah. It never had any blast damage, so.
Yeah, well, they got to start a factory nice. Fresh at some point, right?
Nice. Very nice. I can't think of any other...
I do have things. Two Halloween masks. I have one of Jakar and a Mimbari, like... head mask, I guess, for lack of a better term, like a skull cap it is.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, a matter of fact, I have a styrofoam head, and I actually pack it with our Halloween decorations, and I pull out Jakar every Halloween, and we put him on a window.
That's funny.
It is not meant as disrespect in any way, not at all.
But, nice. Yeah.
So we have a little styrofoam head, and I put the mask on it, and we put it up on a shelf.
Very, very nice.
I would like to think that, Jakar would have been amused by Halloween, even though we never saw it.
Well, you know what the closest we got was? But we won't say anything because Tim will get on that.
No, don't.
Don't you dare. Oh, gee, don't.
It's all
Jeremy's your fault.
Sorry.
Oh, boy. Oh boy.
Is that the third rail of the show?
That was the third rail. We're gonna, I think we're actually pretty much done. If anybody has any questions, you know where to reach us. I do believe that we can get through all of this without too much, spiritual or psychic damage.
Yes.
I really do. I don't know how far down the collectibles rabbit hole we're going to go, but it's going to be a fun ride. I think it'll be a fun ride. Are you ready, Gary?
Oh, I'm ready.
Awesome. So next week, we are going to attempt to cover the first 11 of the comics. I believe we had several people volunteer.
Yep, I gotta sort through all the offers and we'll get to touch
to
with
join us for that. And we will be contacting you over the next few days, even though, unless you're listening live, you're probably going to contact you before you hear this.
Time shifting.
Yes, time shifting. Gotta love it. That we are practicing time travel. We are the tachyon disruption in Sector 14, people. And I think I'm going to have to interrogate Jason some more because he has more background on the comics than I knew existed. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Brett will be back with us next week. Gary, maybe you too.
I should be able to. I'd love to. I enjoy Babylon 5. I'll discuss it with anybody I can.
And you have the comics.
Yes, so
you
I do.
You can walk us through. We can clarify any stuff because we don't have all of them, but we'll make do and follow. We'll go along from there. So once again, thank you for listening to us talk about all of our favorite TV show. If you want to check out more, the website is babylonpodcast.com. If you want to send us an email, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. We are still taking offers for people to join us for discussions on the various novels, the collectible card game. If somebody wants to join Neil and us for that, you're more than welcome to. And yes, we will be talking about the trading cards because I do own most of them.
I've got some, but I don't think nearly what...
And as always, you can call our voicemail line to leave us a message. What was that?
Oh, that was me wanting to say the phone number for the voicemail line is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
That's the year that all the collectibles just kind of showed up in the closet somewhere.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.